Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about what's next for Governor Steve Bullock, grizzly bears, and bison management. It's Thursday, December 5th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. A new report says Indigenous students are disproportionately disciplined in Montana public schools. Olivia Reingold reports study authors say more support instead of discipline could lead to higher academic achievement rates.
Montana public schools are failing to meet their legal obligation to provide an equal education to Native students, according to a report from the American Civil Liberties Union of Montana released Wednesday. It says Indigenous students are more likely to be pulled out of school and referred to law enforcement than their peers. Lori Walker, a social work professor at the University of Montana, helped write the report. She says schools funnel Native students into the criminal justice system, especially when they come from unstable homes.
They come to school hungry and tired and therefore a little irritable or cranky when they experience subtle day-to-day racism in the classroom. That ends up escalating really quickly.
Sometimes to arrests. That happens 6 times more often to Indigenous students than their peers, according to the report.
If a student is disciplined when really they just needed a helping hand, they most likely get more and more marginalized.
Native students are less likely to graduate high school and more likely to miss school than white students. The Office of Public Instruction says it's committed to closing achievement gaps among student groups in Montana. A spokesperson says it's unfortunate that students of color appear to be disciplined at a higher rate because it impacts academic progress. The ACLU report says that to narrow that gap, Montana public schools should limit police presence and discipline that pulls students out of class. It urges campuses to provide better mental health care for students and training for teachers to better manage student behavior. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Olivia Reingold.
After a rash of white supremacy activity in the Flathead Valley this fall, a community organization wants to create a coordinated response with the city of Kalispell and other stakeholders. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports the request for a new communication network is similar to one set up in Whitefish following a 2016 internet trolling campaign by white supremacists.
Flathead Valley-based Love Lives Here went before the Kalispell City Council this week to propose the creation of an informal communication network aimed at responding to white supremacist activity. Sherilyn DeVries with Love Lives Here spoke during the meeting.
But it helps to present a united front and tamp down on rumors and present accurate information to the public.
The idea is the network of community organizers, city officials, police, and other community stakeholders can systematically decide how to respond to white supremacist activity, whether that's coordinating the cleanup of racist graffiti or issuing a unified public response. The request was sparked by a community monument that was spray-painted with a swastika for the second time in recent months, as well as other white supremacist activity like pamphlet drops. DeVries says a similar response network in Whitefish has allowed the community to push back against white supremacist groups attempting to move into town.
And it's worked really well. Sometimes we do things under the radar and quietly, and other times we decide, no, it's going to be much better if we have a public comment or a public presence.
The Whitefish Network was created in 2016 when the publisher of a neo-Nazi website encouraged its readers to start an internet trolling campaign attacking Jewish people in town. DeVries says creating a similar network in Kalispell will help push out hate groups hoping to find followers. Her call for collaboration with the city during the council meeting Monday night was echoed by a few members of the local Jewish community, Rabbi Francine Rosten.
I'm not sure if you know this, but the Jewish community does not feel safe meeting for worship or celebrations without hiring armed security guards. Every service or holiday party, every gathering requires prayer books and armed guards.
Kalispell's city manager, Doug Russell, told MTPR that city officials met with the local group after this week's council meeting and will continue discussions about working together. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
Governor Steve Bullock says he's not sure what's next for him now that he's withdrawn from the presidential race, but he's definitely not running for the U.S. Senate. Montana Public Radio's Corin Cates-Carney reports.
Bullock met with the state capitol press corps for the first time Wednesday since dropping out of his long-shot bid for the Democratic Party's nomination. Bullock's announcement ending his campaign prompted renewed calls from within his own party for the two-term governor to challenge U.S. Senate incumbent Republican Steve Daines in 2020. Nationally, Democrats would need to gain 4 seats in the election next year to outright control the Senate. Some Democrats see Bullock as the best candidate to potentially pick up one of those seats in Montana. Bullock says the end to his presidential campaign does not mean he'll run for the Senate.
I've said it before, I've said it during, I said it when I got out. So yeah, I'm not running for Senate.
Bullock says his decision not to run for the Senate is personal and did not elaborate Wednesday. In previous interviews, Bullock said his experience is as an executive, not as a legislator. If one of the remaining Democratic presidential candidates is able to beat Trump in the 2020 election, Bullock says he's open to a cabinet position.
If a president-elect called, you'd have to take the call. But right now, and look, I'm focusing on, I still get to do this job for a year, and there's still a lot more to do.
Bullock says that includes continuing the work of recently established government councils on grizzly bear management, climate, and forest land policy. He also says the state has work to do on its new Medicaid expansion program, which could soon include work requirements if approved by the federal government. Bullock is entering his final term as governor and can't seek re-election. As for what comes next,
after I'm done being governor, I have no idea.
Bullock says he's glad he ran for president, even though it didn't turn out how he hoped. I'm Corin Cates-Carney, Montana Public Radio News.
As grizzly mortalities mount, bear managers in northwest Montana are trying to tackle the sources of rising deaths. Montana Public Radio's Nick Mott reports.
The last 2 years have been the deadliest on record for grizzlies in and around Glacier National Park. There have been at least 48 grizzly mortalities this year in the area, called the Northern Continental Divide Ecosystem. At a year-end meeting of bear managers on Tuesday, state bear biologist Cecily Costello said those numbers are nothing to worry about yet.
Right now, I'm not willing to say that 2 years of increased mortality is a trend, but I also am not going to say that it's not a trend. So I'm just going to have to say we wait and see what happens.
Costello says the population is still healthy and growing at over 1,000 bears. She says those 48 mortalities still fall below a state threshold for the ecosystem passed last year.
At the same time that you can hear the number and be sad, you can also kind of celebrate in the fact that that many bears could die, and we still have a viable population.
The grizzlies' range is growing along with their population. Now, more private land is occupied by grizzly bears than public land. That leads to conflicts with property and livestock. So Costello says that high death rate
may have a lot to do with the bear population, but it may have a lot to do with us as well.
Costello says human development and recreation have been on the rise. Citing a Headwaters economic study from last year, she says between 1990 and 2016, nearly 300,000 acres of open space was converted to housing and 30,000 new homes were built in the 9 counties that surround the Glacier region. She also says the number of cars entering the park has nearly doubled since 2000. Although Costello says heightened mortalities aren't yet a risk to the grizzly population, bear managers are working to reduce the number of deaths. An interagency working group of federal, state, and tribal officials presented recommendations to address grizzly mortality at the meeting. Hillary Cooley, grizzly bear recovery coordinator for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, says she expects conflicts to continue to expand as human population and recreation continue to rise.
These are tough issues, and it's not going to be enough to spend a few phone calls here working on these topics and expect to have any change. And we want to drop mortalities and drop conflicts.
Cooley identified hunters, roads, trains, chickens, and trash as the primary drivers of conflict based on trends over the last 2 decades. She presented recommendations to address each issue. Trains killed 8 grizzlies in Montana this year.
This was a spike.
Train deaths have actually gone down since 1999 compared to the decade before it. Cooley also says that cattle and sheep depredations and conflicts over beehives have gone down over the same time period. However, other conflicts, especially over chickens, have skyrocketed. Solutions ranged from education, outreach, and collaboration to intensive road projects that could help grizzlies safely pass through traffic to formal regulations that could change human behavior. Across the board, funding was a key barrier to implementation. Cooley expects many of these recommendations to be implemented by 2021. Grizzlies in the lower 48 were listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act in 1975. In the Glacier area, state and federal biologists say they've recovered. At the meeting, State Senator Bruce Gillespie says those bears have been federally protected long enough.
Let's promote a model that gets a grizzly bear delisted, hopefully by next year, and onto a management plan.
In public comment, citizens addressed human safety issues, took issue with U.S. Forest Service projects that compromised bear habitat, and said grizzlies have a long way to go to reach meaningful recovery. Josh Osher is the Montana director for the conservation group the Western Watersheds Project.
Within a tiny little period of history, they were shrunk to almost nothing. So I don't see 44 years as all that long to think about in terms of the time it takes to recover a species.
The Interagency Grizzly Bear Executive Committee will hold its year-end meeting, which will address mortality and other issues across all grizzly ecosystems, on December 16th at the Residence Inn in Missoula. I'm Nick Mott, Montana Public Radio.
A young male grizzly that made his way into the National Selway Bitterroot Wilderness near the Montana-Idaho border this year has made the trek back to the Libby area to den up for the winter. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports the journey showed that bear connectivity to the unpopulated Bitterroot ecosystem is possible.
The young grizzly was brought from the Whitefish Mountain Range near Glacier National Park to the Cabinet Yak ecosystem in 2018 as part of a long-term program to increase bear numbers in the far northwest corner of the state. During a presentation at an interagency grizzly bear committee meeting in Missoula Tuesday, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service grizzly biologist Wayne Casworm said data transmitted from the bear's GPS collar shows that he immediately ventured south when he was released.
The bear did go south, crossed the Clark Fork River, and spent time between Clark Fork, Idaho, and Heron, Montana.
After the young grizzly visited a black bear baiting site in Idaho, he was transported back to the Cabinet Yak Mountains, where he spent last winter. But this spring, he ventured even further south, into the Selway Bitterroot Wilderness, where there's no established grizzly population.
Spent quite a bit of time for the months of June, the last part of June, July, August, and even early September, inside the Selway Bitterroot Wilderness.
The young bear's journey has given hope that grizzlies could naturally begin to repopulate the Bitterroot, one of six established recovery zones for the threatened species. The grizzly has made his way back to the Cabinet Yak ecosystem for the winter. Casworm said there are some gaps in the data transmitted from the bear's collar, but it's known the young male was able to cross Interstate 90 and other busy highways. Once Casworm obtains the collar, he will be able to download the complete dataset that will show all of the bear's movements. That information could shed light on potential connectivity to the Bitterroot. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks announced Tuesday it's crafting a statewide management plan for grizzly bears. Montana Public Radio's Nick Mott reports.
Right now, grizzly management is ecosystem-specific. Montana's home to at least part of four of six of those habitats in the lower 48. That includes a chunk of the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem and all of the habitat in and around Glacier National Park, known as the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem. The state also houses all of the area through which grizzlies are likely to cross if they connect between those two regions.
We got things pretty well nailed in the heart of the Yellowstone and the heart of the NCDE, but what about in between, or what about the Bitterroot, or what about the prairie?
Ken McDonald, Wildlife Bureau Chief at Montana Fish, Wildlife and Parks, says a statewide plan will promote better management as grizzlies expand. State biologists say bear populations are growing and that connection is imminent and could boost the genetic health of both populations. McDonald said recommendations from the governor's Grizzly Bear Advisory Council will help form the statewide management plan, which could take 2 to 3 years to create. That council, composed of 18 Montanans with diverse viewpoints on grizzlies, is holding its third meeting Wednesday and Thursday this week at the University Center in Missoula. I'm Nick Mott, Montana Public Radio.
State, federal, and tribal representatives tasked with managing bison in and around Yellowstone National Park Tuesday voted again to reduce the herd size as animals migrate out of the park this winter. Rachel Kramer reports.
The Interagency Bison Management Team voted on Tuesday to remove 600 to 900 bison through hunting, quarantine, and slaughter. Representatives and the public gathered in West Yellowstone for the team's third and last meeting of the year. Yellowstone National Park biologist Chris Jeremiah said currently there are nearly 5,000 bison, which is 60% higher than the interagency's original goal 2 decades ago. Jeremiah recommended hunting 200 to 300 bison and slaughtering another 400 to 600. These management tools are only used for bison that leave Yellowstone. Here's Jeremiah.
Bison migration, a lot of it depends on the weather. It also depends on the size of the bison population.
Last year, fewer bison left the park's northern boundary due to a mild start to winter. Hunters and wildlife managers removed 460 animals, even though the goal was twice that.
We're trying to hit a fine balance.
Jeremiah says the group wants to maintain bison's natural role and movement on the landscape while also offering hunting opportunities.
But we're also keeping the population at a level where they're generally staying within the conservation area.
The Interagency Bison Management Plan team was created in the 1990s after the state of Montana sued Yellowstone National Park for allowing wild bison to leave park boundaries. It was largely due to concern about a bacterial disease called brucellosis. It can spread between cattle, elk, and bison if animals come into contact with infected afterbirth and causes pregnant animals to abort their fetuses. There hasn't been a confirmed case of bison spreading brucellosis to cattle, but wildlife officials say this is in large part due to management. Hazing bison out of areas where cattle graze and keeping the herd size from getting too large. Yellowstone biologist Jeremiah said 110 bison that are brucellosis-free could be captured this winter to go through the quarantine program, which isolates and regularly tests the animals for disease. Of the dozen people who spoke during the public comment period at Tuesday's meeting, some said they supported the quarantine program and hoped it would expand.
Good afternoon. My name is Don Warner. I'm a private veterinary practitioner in Laurel. I work with both commercial and conservation herds, and I'm excited about the quarantine program, and I hope that we can continue to do this and give these animals a chance.
This summer, 55 bull bison were sent to the Fort Peck Indian Reservation for the final stage of quarantine. Some of them will join the herd there, but most will be sent to other tribes, zoos, and organizations. Other people expressed frustration that the bison population is being suppressed. James Holt is the executive director of the Buffalo Field Campaign, a nonprofit advocacy group working to, quote, stop the harassment and slaughter of America's last wild buffalo.
These buffalo are constantly referred to as Yellowstone National Park's buffalo. There should be more filling the Yellowstone ecosystem, fulfilling its habitat and its homelands as it's its right.
It's okay for elk to spread the disease out there. Why isn't it okay for bison not to be out there too?
Mike Meese is also with the Buffalo Field Campaign.
What I think we could easily do is open that lands up for all wildlife. And if we have a problem, we got 20,000 hunters that would go out and do damage control on any problematic bison.
This year, over 10,500 people applied for 85 tags, according to Greg Lemon with Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. The Fish and Wildlife Commission Thursday will consider whether there should be any changes to hunting seasons and district boundaries in Montana, which will include bison. Nathan Varley is the president of Bear Creek Council, a citizens group from Gardner that has been working to make the annual bison hunt safer and more aesthetically pleasing for residents and visitors.
We definitely want to see the tribes come here. We don't mean to be a thorn in the side of tribal hunters by raising these safety issues.
Varley said he supports the Interagency Bison Management Team's decision Tuesday to form a working group to consider a carcass removal program in areas where hunting is most concentrated. This could look like a temporary modified dumpster where hunters could put bison remains to prevent conflicts with grizzly bears and appease nearby homeowners. The agency said they would need to figure out who would pay for the dumpster and labor to transport it to a carcass composting site or landfill. Fish, Wildlife, and Parks will take the lead on the working group and start those discussions at the beginning of 2020. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for the Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about the Worm is available at ypradio.org.